first thing that happened to you as far as your direct mingling with agents of the government go was when they raided your house. Now, if I'm remembering correctly, this is it's a year ago now almost, right?
Yeah, January 24th.
Right.
Yeah.
So, can you tell us a little bit about what led to that?
A while before the raid, they had been monitoring the website daily.
How did you know that?
I had logs, like just basic web logs that I looked at. You know, I just looked for any type of government monitoring, different types of government agencies coming to the website. I noticed that there were a lot of hits from all sorts of different government agencies going to the website.
What kinds of places, for example, can you remember?
Most of the stuff was going through gateways coming from the Department of Defense. And I can't remember any of the other government agencies specifically, but I know that the main gateway they were using was through the Department of Defense.
Okay.
But, yeah, I was getting a lot of those for a while.
And then one day you wake up and...
Yeah, and then, like, just one day, like, I get raided, which wasn't too surprising considering the fact that they were watching the site as much as they were.
But you had no knowledge that they were going to come to your place.
Oh, no, not that day at all.
You maybe guessed, but you didn't have any, like, direct knowledge.
No, not at all.
What happens then? They show up at your house. I remember reading you were sleeping, but I don't recall what time of day it was. It wasn't like early in the morning or anything.
No. Yeah, I was taking a nap. It was about 4 p.m.
Mm-hmm.
And my sister actually woke me up, and she says that like there's always FBI cars, and there's like cop cars all up and down the streets. And they're all like pointing and looking at this house. And I just like got up, and I was like, oh, no. So I just like went to the door, and... there was two special agents at the door in suits and stuff, and they asked who I was, and I said, Sherman Austin. And they're like, come outside, and I was like, why? And they just like, come outside, and I asked why again. And then they just like kind of grabbed me and pulled me outside, and then I was on the front lawn, and then from there I just saw like all the guys with guns and like machine guns and shotguns. They were just all around the house and all on the front lawn.
So did they actually came into your place at some point, right, and took, you can tell us what they took, a lot of stuff, right, related to your website?
Yeah, like, after they pulled me outside, and they just, like, they basically came inside the house and, like, just, I guess, did their procedure where they secure all the rooms or whatever they do. But, yeah, they came in my room where I had a computer network running, and they basically dismantled the whole thing and downloaded everything off all the computers with all this portable equipment they have, and then they just basically loaded everything into a big white truck. And they also took even protest signs and political literature I had and things like that.
Did they say why?
They said it was because of a post on the site.
So this is a post, like, in a public forum, right?
Yeah, it's a public forum. Even though I didn't write it, they said under the Patriot Act it's illegal, so I guess that gave them legal grounds to actually do the raid. But, you know, it was pretty obvious that they just used it as an excuse to go and, you know, raid the house and get all the computers because, I mean, they've been monitoring the site for a while, and it seems like they've been pretty interested in it for a while, especially when they're interrogating me, like, all the things they're going through, like, you know, through the past and, like, leading up to the whole big raiding event and everything.
So what kind of stuff did they ask you about?
They asked me if anyone else ran the site, if I was doing it alone, or if there were, like, any other parties involved. And they just went through the whole warrant with me, which was, like, so bogus. Like, just the whole warrant was just filled with, like, inaccurate information. And they just basically went through it with me, and they're like, is this true? Is that true? And, like, they asked me questions about, you know, as far back as when I was 14, when their investigation initially started. They asked me things about just like my server I had running and things like that, because I had been running the server for a while, and it basically had progressed over time into a larger network where I actually started running a web server. But I mean, they were asking me questions that were stemming like way back from when I was like 14 about just computer stuff and my servers and people I knew.
So if you don't mind me asking, how many years ago was that?
About 5 years ago.
Okay.
Yeah. So yeah, 'cause I'm 19 now. Yeah, and like, they were interrogating me for about five hours, two FBI agents and the Secret Service.
But eventually they let you go, right?
I mean, they didn't arrest me there at all. They just, you know, were just asking me questions, and, like, the Secret Service was asking me questions, like, I mean, really stupid questions, like, would I ever like to see the president killed, or, you know, if I'm a terrorist, involved in any terrorist organizations, and things like that.
Did you have any idea at that time that you were going to be charged with anything? Did they leave you with that impression?
Yeah, I thought further down the line they're eventually going to charge me with something. I mean, because one of the special agents was like, you know, we could arrest you right now, but we're not going to. We have too much paperwork or whatever to take care of right now, but just to let you know that, you know, you're in pretty serious trouble here. And, you know, he just kind of like told me that the seriousness of the situation, but, you know, regardless of that, I assume that further down the line, after they went through all the computers and got all the information they wanted from them, that they're going to proceed with an indictment or something like that.
And needless to say, you never got any of your stuff back, right?
No, they still have it all.
The next significant event in this story is you, like many other people, go to New York City to protest the World Economic Forum.
Yeah.
And that's where you get arrested. And if I remember right from talking to you last time, you said you felt that you were specifically targeted because there were, what, tens of thousands of demonstrators there.
Yeah.
And you felt that you were kind of singled out because you were with a bunch of people. And
yeah, I actually learned that later during the bail hearing because on my way to New York, one of the FBI agents actually called my house and talked to my mom and was questioning my mom, asking her if I was on my way to New York to the protests and everything. And my mom was just, you know, concerned about my safety, and she was like, she just told the FBI agents, you know, I don't know where he is. I think he's staying at a friend's house right now, but I'm not certain. But it was on the radio, I think a day later, that I was on my way to the protests. So they knew I was on my way there. So from what I learned during the bail hearing, the FBI noticed, I think it was the FBI or the Secret Service notified the New York Police Department, the New York Police Sheriff's, and everything, that I was going to be there. So they decided just to single out a bunch of people who were wearing black, and they just kind of swooped us up as they, you know, just rushed us all at once, and they arrested like 27 of us, and I was in that 27.
Do you know what happened to the other people?
As far as I know, they were released. A lot of them were actually released before I was. I was the last.
Well, you were in there for, what, I heard 17 days, if I remember.
Yeah, I was actually in New York, a New York jail in Brooklyn for about 30 hours, and then I was released, and I was actually released and free to go, but I was standing in the court building just waiting for a ride for about 30 minutes, and then six FBI agents came into the building, and they arrested me there.
What did they charge you with?
They said I was arrested for posting information related to explosives on the internet.
Right, but you didn't do that.
No, I didn't even author the information. The information was posted on the site. You know, I left it there because I don't like censoring things there. I leave things on there. Even things I disagree with, I leave things on there, you know, for the purpose of free speech, things like that.
What was this material exactly? I remember that it was stuff that was, you know, not alien to the internet in general. Like, it was stuff that had been posted elsewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it seemed, when I read it, it seemed like, you know, very, very amateur, like something like you can definitely find in any library on any website. I mean, you could probably find, like, 10 times more information on any other website on the internet.
So it was, like, stuff for making pipe bombs or...
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. So you get arrested, they tell you what for, and they keep you for 17 days.
Yeah.
And I remember at some point you were flown to Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And that was kind of when you were on your way back home?
Yeah, they were... they were going to have me transported back to California from where the charges originated from. So they were flying me back to California, but there's a prisoner hub in Oklahoma where they take all inmates before they take you to their final destination. And it's like this federal jail detention place. And I was there for about 2 days, and then I learned my charges were dropped, so I was released in Oklahoma City.
They didn't take you the rest of the way home, right? You found your own way home?
Yeah, well, actually, my lawyer had a court order put in that they had to put me on a plane, you know, by myself, just like a commercial airliner jet, mm-hmm. Back to Los Angeles. So I was basically just flown back to L.A. after that.
And the charges were dropped?
Yeah, or I guess from what I heard, the federal prosecutors decided not to proceed with indictment because I assume they hadn't gone through all the computers yet, and they wanted to... I guess, try and gather more information or whatever before they indicted me on that charge.
So you lived in, pretty much on your normal routine. I know you got your website back up.
Yeah.
When did you find out that you were going to be charged? Like, what was the process here? I understand there was an indictment at some point, maybe a couple months ago, or?
Well, actually, it was about 6 months after I had got out, and then what happened was the federal prosecutors actually called my lawyer, and they said that, you know, they didn't want to let me off the hook, and they wanted to proceed with an indictment, but what they wanted to do was offer me a pre-indictment plea deal, which was 1 month in jail and 5 months and a half way off and 3 years supervised release, which is like probation.
And this is before you've even been formally charged with anything.
Yeah, this is before I'd even been, like, you know, formally indicted on anything. Because they wanted to proceed with a pre-indictment for, I guess, they didn't want any publicity or anything like that, but... Mm-hmm. Yeah, my lawyer was contacted, and then he told me, and, like, I thought about it for a while. And then, at first, I was going to take the plea, and then I decided not to, then I decided to, and I actually went to court, and then that's when the judge rejected the plea, because he said, you know, you wanted me to serve more time in jail, at least like 12 months. So then after that...
Well, can we just back up for a second?
Sure.
I'm kind of wondering what was going through your mind when you were kind of going back and forth about accepting the plea arrangement.
Like, oh, yeah.
I know you've got to consider yourself pretty much innocent of...
Yeah.
What you're charged with. So what were you thinking there?
Yeah, well, like, my first reaction was like, no, I'm going to trial, like, instantly. But, you know, like, you know, my true intentions are to, you know, fight it and go to trial. But, you know, all I was trying to do is make, you know, an informative decision and try to look at the reality of the situation. Whereas that, how much time you'd be facing if going to trial versus, you know, taking a plea, you know, based on, you know, the current climate. The current climate in, you know, in the U.S. right now with the whole anti-terrorism, you know, BS and everything that's going on, how that could probably, you know, affect the case on grounds of, like, you know, how the jury would think, you know, your average, you know, middle-class white American would think, you know, on a trial like this, you know, could have, I mean, the chances are a lot slimmer in winning a trial like this in this type of political climate. Especially with all the money they spent on the investigation, like, this is something they totally wouldn't want to lose, and I'd assume that they'd, you know, totally spend, you know, a lot more money on it and probably try to charge me with more charges if I went to trial. But I don't know, because I was really confused about, you know, whether I should go to trial or whether I should accept the plea. And still, I haven't decided yet as if I'm going to go to trial or not, but... yeah, I'm still thinking about it.
But it looks like you're not going to have a choice now, right?
You know, like, actually...
Because you were saying this judge decided that he was not going to accept the plea arrangement.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, like, the judge decided
he
didn't want to
accept
it.
Sorry, I'm going back and forward.
Yeah. And so, yeah, basically after that, my lawyer is going to actually try to submit a pre-plea report to the judge. You know, if I want to try to get the judge to reconsider and accepting the plea agreement... Which I don't think he will, because, I mean, he seemed pretty defiant and pretty set with his decision on he didn't want to accept the plea. But if I wanted to, I can try and get him to reconsider and accepting the plea with a pre-plea report, which is just basically, you know, a positive outline of, like, my whole life and everything like that. But if I don't want to do that, I just basically go to trial. But
so
if I were,
so
if I were,
so you're still hopeful, right? That they're going to accept the original agreement, or would you rather get your day in court?
It depends.
Right, but as of now, the choice has more or less been taken out of your hands.
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather go to court and I'd rather go to trial, but it's just that, you know, how much time I'm risking here. Because if I go to trial and I get convicted, I'll potentially serve 3 to 4 years in federal prison, and that'll be like maximum security. And you know where I was for about 13 days in New York, in Oklahoma. It's like a small cell, but, I mean, it all depends, like on, you know, how powerful my defense would be, you know, against the charges they're trying to indict me with. But
are you confident about your lawyer's ability to, you know, argue your case effectively?
Yeah, I'm pretty confident on my legal representation.
That that's got to be a funny position for an anarchist to be in.
Yeah, it is.
any thoughts about that, in, like, as an anarchist, how are your experiences in the legal system?
Yeah, it's kind of weird, actually. I mean, from an anarchist perspective, it's kind of different, you know, from what I've learned when you talk to a number of different lawyers, you know, about the legal system and things like trials and fighting charges and things like that. Because, you know, usually the anarchist perspective is to not recognize the authority of the state, you know, kind of be self-sufficient and independent.
Yeah, but then if they're going to throw you in jail,
exactly. If they're gonna throw you in jail, you're gonna obviously try to, you know, utilize anything, anything possible within your reach to try and, you know, defend you and defend your case, and things like that. But I mean, I don't know. Like, I've noticed that a lot of lawyers have different perspectives on cases than a lot of anarchists or progressive activists do. Like, I don't know. Like, from the anarchist perspective, I noticed a lot of anarchists would want to, you know, try and build support within the community or within the movement and try and give them some of that thrust behind their trials and cases and things like that, so they have a lot of support. That could put a lot of pressure on the legal system and kind of hopefully get them to, you know, back down a little bit. But it all depends on, you know, what kind of case it is and things like that. So it's like, you know, it's like you want legal representation that's good enough, but you also, like, the other half of it is, like, how much support you have, how much thrust you have behind you, and, like, how much people you have behind you, and things like that.
But you've had a lot of, I was reading something that you wrote at InfoShop that seemed to indicate you've been getting a lot of, at least, letters of support.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I've been getting a lot of emails of people, you know, basically asking how they can support and what they can do.
So what's the answer to that question? What can people do if they want to help you out, other than, I guess what you need is money for to mount your defense?
Yeah, I mean, you know, legal defense funds are always great. Just getting the word out is good, too. Protests, even flyers, informative flyers, things like that. I mean,
have there been protests yet?
There was one protest on April 6th. Against the Patriot Act, and there's going to be another one on January 24th, which is going to be a one-year anniversary of the raid. Yeah, where it's getting out. What we're going to try to do is, like, trying to get different protests going on in different areas, if possible, you know, on the 24th, so, you know, the word can get out more.
Jeez, what's the best-case scenario, then, for you? For you, the best-case scenario is, I'm going to go out on a limb and guess, you go to court, you win your case, you never hear anything about it again.
Yeah.
You think that's going to happen?
I don't know. Like,
know if you're actually going to go to trial, right?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm going to go to trial yet. But, I mean, if I went to trial, I don't know. I don't know if I'd want to be too optimistic, you know, for my own mental health if I were to lose and, you know, get sentenced to a few years in prison. But I would just want to look at the situation realistically and not try to think I'm going to win, but, you know, rather hope I'm going to win, but expect to lose at the same time. Because, I mean, it is like a very heavy case, and my chances, especially in this type of political climate, where, you know, any type of political dissent, you know, anarchists, socialist, communist activists, and, you know, anyone, even people of color, you know, are just, you know, almost labeled as terrorists in the eyes of national security, even when you try to voice an opinion that's, you know, just a little bit different than, you know, the interests of this country. Yeah, it's like Operation COINTELPRO is starting, you know, back up with this new anti-terrorism thrust behind it.
Is that what you think it is? Is that do you think that this is, like, based on people's? I guess to a certain extent, it is based on people's fears after September 11th. But realistically, the government seems to have had this agenda for a little longer than that.
Oh yeah, the U.S. has had this agenda for, you know, a while. Not even just, you know, nationally with, like, local affairs, but even internationally. I mean, from you know, toppling you know, other democratic governments that have been elected and, you know, put into power by the people through, you know, social movements, even, you know, things like that, through nationally, you know, ever since the 60s in this country, you know, in early 70s, especially with the Black Panthers. I mean, Operation COINTELPRO, like, completely destroyed people's lives and locked people up, had people framed, criminalized, falsely accused, murdered, you know, things like that. I mean, and it kind of toned down for a while after, you know, it pretty much devastated the whole radical movement, but, you know, a lot of people have been noticing that it's really starting to pick up again, especially around the anarchist movement.
Well, and rightfully so. I mean, we're living in difficult times for people who have the anarchist values in particular. I mean, things seem to be going exactly the opposite of the way they the way they should be, or the way we'd like them to be, I guess.
Yeah.
But you know, I don't think it's just anarchist or activist communities. I think it's people as a whole. I think that the government seems to be. I mean, it's happening the same in the U.S. as it is in Canada. The government seems to be ignoring the people who are supposed to have elected them, the people who they're supposed to represent.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, even just regular people, it was not too long ago, the government pretty much rounded up about 500 Iranians, Middle Easterns in Southern California for this new immigration law they were trying to pass, and just basically they had like about 500 different Iranians and Middle Easterns had to go in and for this immigration thing, and a lot of them just ended up getting arrested unexpectedly, and they just sat in jails for like days, and they're just basically rounded up, like concentration.
Well, a lot of them are still detained, right?
Yeah, a lot of them are still in there too.
Yeah, I'm guessing those people are going to be deported.
Yeah, and like a lot of them are just your ordinary person, like not even an activist, not even into any of this stuff, but you know, it just hits them right there out of the blue. Definitely, I figure it's going to get a lot worse, especially once this new war in Iraq starts. It's going to be a whole new, well, not necessarily new, but a more intensified, fear of terrorism, especially through all the corporate propaganda and mainstream propaganda that's been going on throughout the news networks and everything like that. I mean, it's just going to create, a global form of, insecurity and things like that in the world, and it's just going to be like, I would feel they're just going to start rounding people up, like left and right, like regardless if you're an anarchist or an activist or, from political descent. I mean, if your skin color is brown and you look Muslim, bam, you're rounded up, you're in jail, or you're in some concentration camp.